Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
It's a show for lovers.
Oh, we're finally saying it.
This show's for lovers. And if that doesn't describe you, you know, that's okay, I guess.
And can I say, you don't have to have a partner
to be
a lover.
Oh, no. I'm talking about people who just love.
Who just do love hard and
love wet.
I almost said that.
That's
and then
bad.
I was like, that's too much. I'm not going to. And
we're
so
both kind of, we are, like they would say in a sort of problematic, like late aughts, like pop song that got a lot of radio play, we're broken in the same beautiful ways. This is wonderful. It's a show where we talk about things that we like, things that we're into. It's a Valentine's Day spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a lot
okay.
of big plans for you, loves,
yeah.
chocolates. I thought about doing a Valentine's Day themed thing. And I didn't come up with anything that I felt good about, which maybe you did.
I didn't even think about it.
Okay, fantastic. But the thing, I was tempted to bring Valentine's, like, exchange cards that you did in, like, elementary school. I feel like that was the
Valentine's exchange cards.
Well, there's not a good word for it, right?
I know, you're right.
It's not, I think that's what they're called, because it's not like
it just sounds like a Subway stamp coupon.
It is essentially all it was. I mean, when you got one of those from your friends, usually tucked into a big envelope that you had taped to the front of your desk or something like that, we're not talking about a full-blown Hallmark size card. We're talking about a little piece of paper. Maybe there's some Smarties glued to it or something, but it's gonna have, you know, Stretch Armstrong. It's gonna have Mighty Max. It's gonna have the Power Rangers.
Now there is a whole like DIY empire, like via Pinterest, on like making these elaborate, like pun-filled Valentines for your child. And I see a lot of this.
Okay.
And I don't know, man. When I was a kid, I just wanted Alf on a Valentine.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was Pokemon, and that's easy. There's a lot. You can, like,
just
I choose you.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's, you really
Done.
Don't need anything else. You
can from be pretty, Griffin.
From Griffin. I choose you. Do you have a small wonder?
Why don't you go first?
I just did.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah.
You said, like, I thought about.
Oh, okay. Well, that was my small wonder.
Oh. You really tricked me.
Uh-huh.
Okay, my small wonder is going to be just working in bed, I guess.
Interesting. Elaborate.
So when I started working from home, I was very much like, I'm going to sit in this office chair at this desk.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm going to just like, maybe I'll just not sit in the office chair. And then slowly, as the pandemic has continued, it's like, maybe I'll just sit in bed.
Uh-huh.
And this might be sad.
No,
to some people,
man. Free your mind.
But works for me.
Sure.
Super comfy.
The bed is good for that. I'm always saying that about bed. My first thing this week, if I may.
Yes, please.
Is a beloved comedian, not just by me, but I think by pretty much everybody who ever heard his work. It's Mitch Hedberg is who I'm going to be talking about first this week. Because I saw somebody on Facebook post like some quote of his, of which there are so many quotable things that Mitch Hedberg said, that I was like, oh, I should talk about Mitch Hedberg. And looking into him made me really kind of realize like what an actual impact his work had on sort of how I think about comedy. Specifically how it can be benign and still like very funny. Like it can be, it doesn't have to be. I listened to a lot of stand-up comedy. I watched a lot of stand-up comedy growing up. This should come as no surprise to anybody who has listened to our work before, is like we grew up ingesting a lot of works of comedy. But like even the folks who I idolized got mean from time to time, or there was some sort of edge to their work that was either sort of a little harsh then or has certainly not aged particularly well
or
now.
They followed the kind of the like the standard tropes of stand-up comedy,
right?
Like the storytelling that like you can kind of follow beat for beat and know exactly where it's going.
Exactly. Like even like I love Patton Oswalt, right? And I grew up listening to Patton Oswalt like hardcore. And it was great. But even then, like compared to Mitch Hedberg, like it still got a little bit mean from time to time. So Mitch Hedberg was a comedian who was active in the late 90s and early aughts. And he had this really incredible, unique style of delivering these one or two liner jokes in this deadpan sort of stoner fashion. He specializes in a type of joke that I did not know there was a word for until I was doing this research today, and it's a word that I'm absolutely obsessed with now. Paraprosdokians is the name of this.
I have never heard this.
Yes, they are jokes with two halves, the latter of which is unexpected and sort of reframes how you think about the first part of the joke.
Yeah.
Groucho Marx was a huge figure.
Shot
an
elephant in my pajamas.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, for example... Probably Mitch Hedberg's best known joke is, I used to do drugs. I still do, but I used to, too.
it's so good.
The perfect sort of formula, I feel like, for what the kind of style of joke that he worked in.
And there's such a like fearlessness to it, because I feel like there are comedians that have probably thought of a good line like that, but then they feel like they have to build a whole story around
it
because they are afraid to just come straight out with the punchline.
But he cultivated this method of just acting on a stage that made it sort of make sense that he just stood up. Usually not stood up. His style is usually wearing sunglasses on stage, usually seated, and usually staring straight down at the floor, which is something I really like about Mitch Hedberg, is like he was very open about having stage fright. And his earlier comedy was not like this. Like, it took him a while to get to this place where he was comfortable doing comedy the way that he did comedy really, really well, and people fell in love with him. And I really appreciate like seeing somebody lean into their own sort of personality to develop their onstage persona. And that is what Mitch Hedberg did. He would just stare at the ground and just absolutely just slay up there. He was just beloved. He was the comedian's comedian. Like, that's a very, I don't know, trite phrase, I feel like, but if it's true of anybody, it was true of Mitch Hedberg. And he, very sadly, he died of a drug overdose in 2005, which I remember really very clearly. They announced his death on April Fool's Day, and I, like many other people, thought it was just like a really sick joke, although it did not take a second thought to realize like that's not really the style of joke that he worked. He's not much of a pranker.
Well, yeah, and he was also pretty open about his issues.
Hugely open.
Substance abuse.
Yeah, he was on the Howard Stern Show, I feel like, a couple months before he died, speaking very openly, like, yeah, I use heroin, but I have it totally under control, and I use it for its creative effects. He had a heart defect his whole life, which they think contributed to his death. But I think that the way, it wasn't just important for me. I feel like the way he dealt with absurdity in this benign way really, really influenced comedy for a lot of people of our generation. And the thing that kind of made it click for me is somebody wrote about how if Mitch Hedberg had been on Twitter, like he would have dominated, like he would have been an incredibly powerful force. Not that I think that you know, Twitter was necessarily place that he would have shined, but he was a shit poster. Like, he was a comedian shit poster of the highest caliber, and
so concise too. Like, I don't know what his editing process was, but I have to imagine he just refined and refined and refined, because it was very clear that there were no extra words in anything.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like in some small way, like, watching Mitch Hedberg made me and a lot of people who try to be funny feel more comfortable with being like, with being absurd and having that be the sort of defining characteristic of your comedy, and not like here's some brutal takedown of X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, or you don't have to be super big, you know? Yeah. Like, I feel like there were a lot of comedians, you know, in that time period that just had really big, loud, like, raucous personalities.
And this was the opposite of that. I don't have anything else except some really, really good Mish Hedberg jokes. So they're like, really perfect for quoting. Like, I don't remember many jokes, but these are so, because of how bite-sized they were, like, they're pretty easy to remember. My friend asked me if I wanted a frozen banana. I said no, but I may want a regular banana later, so yeah. Wearing a turtleneck is like being strangled by a really weak guy all day. I'm against picketing, but I don't know how to show it. Oh god. If you're flammable and have legs, you are never blocking the fire exit. I got a parrot. The parrot talked, but it did not say, I'm hungry, so it died. Yeah. I just love Mitch Hedberg. I feel like it's easy to sort of write him off looking back as just like this stoner comedy thing. But I feel like actually, if you look at what people find funny today, he is a titan. Mm-hmm. What's your first thing?
My first thing is the slap shot.
Oh, yeah.
We have been watching a lot of hockey.
So much hockey.
This hockey season is different in any number of ways, much the way that a lot of professional sports have been.
I would say the NHL has done a fairly good job of like keeping things.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they're taking a lot of precautions.
They basically split the league into like four mini leagues essentially and are keeping everybody kind of sequestered.
Yeah. There are fewer games. You play the same team a few times in a row, just to kind of minimize travel and exposure. There are all these rules around it, but it's still, you know, there's some hiccups there.
The Blues are now four games into an accidental six-game series with the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah.
And these boys do not care for each other anymore. Maybe those first couple games, they're like, all right, guys, let's just play clean out there. And now they're like, oh, here comes Schwartz again. Get him!
The last game we watched, literally the game started with a fight.
Like 10
the
seconds
first,
in.
Yeah, the players.
Over some beef that happened two games ago. Yeah.
Yeah. But one of the things there has been a lot of, particularly the Blues players have been doing a lot of slap shots. And, you know, it depends on the goalie and the team you're playing, but it is a very effective way to get the puck in the net.
I have learned a lot about the different types of shots, and there are some cool ass names like wristers and one timers.
Slap shots. Yeah, so the snapshot is kind of what they call like a wrist, like a fast wrist shot.
Yeah.
There's also a version of the slap shot that I particularly like called the one timer.
Right, yes.
So let me go back and just say what a slap shot is. So it's the hardest shot that a player can shoot, and it is raising your stick up to about shoulder height or higher, and then just slapping the ice behind the puck and using your weight to bend the stick so it stores energy like a spring.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that was happening.
Yeah. And sometimes this can be tricky because of that huge windup.
Right, yeah.
Like, people know it's coming.
Yeah, you are telegraphing it as much as possible.
Yeah. So the one-timer is more effective in some ways because you don't allow the puck to stop. So this it's like a very challenging shot, but if somebody passes the puck to you instead of steadying it and then winding up, you are just ready. So as soon as it gets into your little field of vision, you are swinging the stick before it has even stopped.
It's the raddest thing that can happen in hockey.
Yeah, it's the Blues have used this a lot for, I think, a few reasons. One, like, Arizona's defense is so great.
They can't get in close, yeah.
Yeah, that if they stopped the puck and started to wind up, somebody would knock them over.
Right, yeah.
Immediately. And also, the goaltenders are very good. And so the one-timer is more effective because the goaltender doesn't necessarily have time to prepare.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they are following the puck the same way we are, and they're trying to, like, figure out where it's going to be. And by the time it gets to that player, it's already on the way to them.
It's what I really like about hockey is, like, there's so many different ways to score a goal, but usually it breaks down into let's get a bunch of guys really close to the net and then just like everybody just start hitting that puck as soon as you see it, just start sort of trying to chip it right in. Or if they won't let us do that, let's just fucking hit it really very, very hard directly at the goal and see what happens.
So there is somebody that is credited with the invention of the slap shot. Obviously, this is a tricky thing to track.
Yeah, who's the first person that was like, I'll just hit it pretty hard,
I guess. Really get my stick back. And so, you know what's strange? And I don't know the history behind this, but a lot of these slap shot players that are like, you know, particularly good at this technique are on the Montreal Canadiens.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if that's because it's like a very old team. Like it's just been around for a really long time.
Yeah.
But like when you look at some of the players that have been like most famous for this or having particularly hard shots, they're all Montreal players.
Huh.
So this is Bernard Boom Boom Geoffrion.
Fuck yeah. One more again?
I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce his last name. It's unfortunate because it really slows me down.
Yeah.
Through the best part. Bernard Boom Boom Geoffrion.
Okay. Sounds good.
He was doing this like way back in the beginning, and he was so good at it that supposedly in 1956, when the league mandated that a power play ended after a goal was scored, it was because of him.
Oh, okay.
It used to be that if you got that power play for 2 minutes, which meant you had more players on the ice,
it would go the full 2 minutes.
Just the full 2 minutes,
no
matter
what.
You
score and score and score and score and score.
So players like Boom Boom could get, you know, two, three, four goals.
Yeah.
And so that's when they made the rule, supposedly, in the 50s while he was playing. Of, yeah, like, all right, if you get a goal, it's over.
You play enough games where it's like 16 to nothing at the end of it. It's like, well, maybe something should change.
The other thing that I wanted to talk about briefly is the hardest shot competition. So this happens every year at the All-Star Skills Competition.
Yeah.
And typically these shots are like over 100 miles an hour.
Fun. Boy, howdy, I would love to stand in front of one of those.
The thing that I kept thinking about is how like a big defensive maneuver when your team is shorthanded because of a penalty is a lot of players will throw their body down on the ice to block a shot.
Right.
And with a slap shot, that's easier to do because you see the player wind up and you're like, oh, they're going
to
do it.
That just gives you more time to be like, I'm going to be fucked up after this. This is going to hurt my body. So you have like a full second and a half of like, I'm going to die.
Yeah. I will say hockey players are almost entirely covered. Like
almost.
But there are definitely parts where the coverage is not there.
Yeah.
And yeah, they will just throw their body on the ground in front of these shots.
Yeah.
Sometimes repeatedly. And they are going very, very fast. From what I could tell, there is a record for the slap shot. It's 108.8 miles per hour. It's a Boston Bruins player.
That's so fast.
There is somebody from the American. So there's the National Hockey League, and then I guess there's the American Hockey League. It was bested at 109.2 miles per hour.
Okay.
The guy who had the previous record, the 108.8 from the Boston Bruins, Zdeno Chara, is 6'9" and 250 pounds.
Just
an enormous man.
Just destroy me, daddy. Get on that fucking ice and blast me with a 108-mile puck. Daddy, please. Fuck.
There have been other shots that have been recorded faster, but like the skills competition has a very specific, like, here's the distance you stand at, you know, here's how we measure it. So they typically use that measurement as opposed to others.
There may be faster shots. A shot coming at you from a 7-foot gentleman at over 100 miles an hour, I would argue, is the scariest shot that could come in.
Yeah.
There has not been a scarier shot. How are goalies not just like, I'm fucking leave? Go ahead. Go ahead. Because I have other games to play. I'm not ready for my career to end because you punch a hole through me.
Well, that's what I was looking at. Because, you know, like in the 50s, when I was talking about our friend Boom Boom.
Yeah.
Not everybody was wearing helmets, you know? Like that was a time period where even the goalies, like, were just kind of, you know, they're wearing maybe like the... Jason like face mask, but they're not like, you know, really investing in some helmets. And yeah, I can't imagine.
It just feels better. Hockey just feels better without all that. Oh, come on, babe. Come on, Boom
it's
Boom.
So hard to breathe with the mask.
It's so hard to breathe. We don't need it. Boom Boom just decapitated a guy. All right. Actually, you know what? It feels better to wear the helmet. I've decided recently.
Yeah. So yeah, I wanted to bring the slap shot. I mean, my preference is for the one timer,
right?
It all kind of starts with that slap shot, that huge windup.
And in the case of Boom Boom, it ends your life with the slap shot. Hey, can I steal your way?
Yes.
Oh, Jumbotron.
Oh, okay. All right. I got nervous there.
Can you read this first one?
Yeah, this is for Steven, and it is from Crystal. Happy early, late, maybe on time anniversary. We've been dating for 7 years, and it's crazy how well we drive together since we met selling at Anime Con in Vegas. We survived a whole year of quarantine in our apartment, so there's nothing we can't do together. Here's to many more years together with a bunch of penguins.
That, I mean, listen, quarantine's been tough for everyone. And, you know, we complain because of our little rascal that keeps us on our toes. But being quarantined with a bunch of penguins, I read Mr. Popper's Penguins. Those little guys are up to no good.
Well, it's so loud.
Loud.
That's, you know, I like a penguin. I like to see a penguin move around. I like to see him swim.
But you get a couple rowdy rock hoppers.
Loud guys.
Here's a message, and this one's for Alyssa, and it's from Gabe, who says, happy most recent major event, my love. Each moment of the last 4.5 years with you has been wonderful. You made this year easier by playing games, watching shows, and crafting together. If I haven't gotten impatient and done so already, I want to use the podcast that makes me think of your lovable, goofy, sweet personality to ask, will you marry me? And I like to leave a pause there for the answer because it's, yeah, you know, a lot of times it's like.
Maybe we should do another pause because maybe Alyssa was.
It's still happening. Maybe it's still
Alyssa
happening.
Was shocked.
Okay, you're right. Let's do a moment.
And there's a reaction.
Yeah, it's a moment of silence, but for love. Unless it already hit, they got impatient and it already happened, in which case it's just dead air.
Unless Gabe submitted this and then immediately asked and was like, never mind.
Congrats, Alyssa and
yeah.
Gabe. That's a pure good love. 4.5 years.
It's a good, you know, it's a good time to let your loved people know that you love them.
Absolutely.
So good work. Good work, Gabe.
Welcome.
Thank you. No
problem.
These are real podcast listeners, not actors.
What do you look for in a podcast?
Reliability is big for me.
Power.
I'd say comfort.
What do you think of this?
Oh.
That's Jordan Jesse Go.
Jordan Jesse Go?
They came out of the floor?
And down from the ceiling?
That can't be safe.
I'm upset.
Can we go now?
Soon. Jordan Jesse Go, a real podcast.
Can't remember the last time I was as excited for a segment as I am for my second segment. Are you ready for it? This is one that spiraled wildly out of control.
You didn't let me answer.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, I am ready.
This spiraled out of control as I was researching it, okay? And I want to walk you sort of through the process. We, like a lot of people, have been watching WandaVision, which is a Marvel sort of, it's telling a story, but it's also a send-up of sitcoms, and specifically their theme songs. So watching this latest episode where they've kind of reached the 80s era of sitcom themes, I wanted to talk about the theme song to Perfect Strangers titled Nothing's Gonna Stop Me Now.
Oh my gosh. You know more about this theme song than I would expect for someone who never really watched the show.
Never watched a fucking episode of Perfect Strangers.
I definitely watched Perfect Strangers. I don't know why exactly.
It ran forever. It ran for, I think, 8 seasons. This show went on for a long time, meaning America heard the theme song to Perfect Strangers a lot. I'm not going to play it, but I will sing it. It's the one that's like, standing tall on the wings of my dreams. It's that one.
Gives me chills.
It goes for a long time. It's a long song.
To be fair, all theme songs back on that time period did.
Yeah.
Like, if you are somebody that has watched Quantum Leap and has watched the original theme song start to finish, very, very long.
Yeah, Perfect Strangers was weird because it didn't use a lot of clips from the actual show. It was essentially a music video of the two main characters.
Yeah, just walking around together.
Even before that, it's like you see Cousin Balky in like his village saying goodbye to his family, and then he gets on a truck headed for the U.S., and then he's on a ferry driving by the Statue
Kinda
of Liberty.
Kind of like Fresh Prince in a way.
Kind of like Fresh Prince. And the theme song is uplifting and powerful and has a pretty righteous few harmonica solos in there that are just like fully iconic. So I was like, okay, this song's great. Probably not enough for a whole segment, but hey, I wonder who wrote this song. The song was written by a writing duo of Jesse Frederick and Bennett Salve. And these two came together in the mid-80s. They had individually had some success writing music for TV and movies. Jesse Frederick had done a few like film scores. Bennett Salve had been the music director for a few sitcoms like Mork and Mindy and Happy Days. But when these two got together, it started a movement. It started something important. First off, Perfect Strangers. They wrote the theme song for that. Ran 8 seasons. People heard a lot of Frederick and Salve during those years. 1987, Miller Boyette was working on another ABC sitcom production. And they returned to Frederick and Salve. They were like, hey, we need a new theme song for this sitcom. And we want it to really pop off. We want it to be about achieving your dreams and about the love of the family. And they were like, let's see what we can do. Went into the studio, came out with, you want to guess?
I mean, you said family, so I'm tempted to say Growing Pains.
No, but that's a good guess. Growing Pains, I don't know if they did. I didn't find that out, but it was Everywhere You Look for Full House.
Oh my gosh.
Everywhere you look, everywhere there's a heart. It's fucking good. That's a good
incredible.
One.
Incredible. You know, like, there are very few theme songs I can sing start to finish. Mm-hmm. And like, so far,
whatever happens to predictability.
It's incredible.
It's really, really good. That's another sort of iconic theme song, right? And people loved it. And at that point, you know, two is a pattern at that point. People are saying, okay, these two, they're going to write you an upbeat, lyric-heavy song about love and family and chasing your dreams. There's some apocrypha about Full House I did not know. Uncle Jesse's character was originally Uncle Adam, and he was also a comedian living in San Francisco, which, like, that version of the show sucks shit. but then they, in rewrites, got turned into, like, a cool rocker uncle and got renamed Jesse, and people said, well, that's based on Jesse Frederick, the cool rocker who helped write the theme song for Full House.
Said Have Mercy a lot.
Said Have Mercy. Apparently, Elvis had a twin brother who died young, whose name was Jesse, who is probably the actual inspiration for it. But anyway, September 1989, there's a new sitcom in the works. This one's a spinoff of Perfect Strangers, a fact that I forget anytime I think about this show. Let's get Frederick and Salve back in the studio. This time, we're going to write a song about family. A family that loves each other.
No.
Gonna talk about the bigger love of the family. That's right, it's Family Matters. As days go by, Frederick and Salve back in the fucking mix, crushing it again. Originally, the theme song to Family Matters was just It's a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong.
Oh.
They got six episodes in. They were like, no, we need...
Different tone.
We need OC. We need original content here in the studio.
You know how we talked about Yacht Rock a little?
Yep.
I feel like I would watch a Yacht Rock about these guys writing these songs.
Especially once they get into the 90s when they get to Step by Step.
I thought maybe you were going to...
The same fucking guys.
When you were talking about all these like family TV shows, I started thinking of all the ones. Step by Step.
Different every day.
Do you ever watch that show?
Fuck yeah, I watched it.
I found it terrible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was an episode where I think Skip was one of the characters and Patrick Duffy's character got in a very extended bar fight, like an extended pool hall brawl that lasted for like an entire between commercials block, like just beating ass nonstop. I remember that episode. I remember very little else about it except for the incredible theme song.
Yeah, I will tell you, I feel like Step by Step was a show where maybe I would just watch the theme song and then turn it off.
Yeah, usually that was when I would tap out. It's just like incredible to me. I never connected the dots of, hey, all these theme songs sound alike, and maybe they were written by the same people.
As you're singing them, I'm noticing the commonality, but I never really thought about it.
It would take literally 1 second of thinking about it to put together, hey, maybe they were made by the same people, but I didn't do that until today when I was inspired. 2016 also got the fucking band back together.
Wow.
To work on a little project called Fuller House.
Oh, okay.
Where they worked on a new version.
I don't know that one.
Fresh version. Oh, you do, because we've heard it before, because they teamed up with the fucking queen of reality, Carly Rae Jepsen, to get together to make this
new hot version. We did.
Fucking Bennett Salve, Frederick, Jesse Frederick, what can't they do? Maybe do other things that aren't like incredibly uplifting sitcom theme songs.
Yeah, I mean, the sitcom has changed a little bit. So maybe they're still willing to work and we just need to find them the right project.
Iconic, though. Iconic. Nobody does what they do better than they do it.
Oh, did you bring this because they're the new Mabim Bam theme song?
Oh, my God. No, I'm very excited about where we're at with the new Mabim Bam theme song. I don't know that you probably can't get a meeting. With Frederick.
Well, and your show probably isn't family friendly enough for them.
They would not.
I bet they have a high bar.
They would write a first draft after we gave them the log line of our podcast that would be like, these three brothers are coming together. Your dreams are in sight. And then they would listen to an episode and be like, we hereby cancel our contract. Do not use that.
Sure, you laugh and you love and you learn along the way, but the swears, so many. Yeah. So many swears.
I would say the theme song that's in the hopper has big Salve Frederick energy.
Oh, that's high praise.
Yeah, it is the highest praise. What is your second thing?
I think my second thing is cool.
Okay.
Maybe not everybody
strong
does.
Defense.
It is package tracking.
No, I mean it's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's an incredible development of technology and logistics.
Sometimes I bring things that I feel like are kind of like scotch tape, you know, where it's like, oh, this is a really great thing, you know, but do we have to talk about it?
I remember like, you know, I didn't do a lot of online shopping when I was a kid because it didn't really exist yet. But I remember ordering things like out of magazines or something and then getting them 4 months later and like being like, oh, what is this?
Yeah.
I don't remember. But now it's like, I click on this thing and it's like, it's in Duluth in a gentleman named Brian, his truck. He's driving 54 miles an hour.
Here's Brian's traffic record.
Yep.
You can be sure your package is safe.
Press this button to see a webcam with Brian on it. You could go on an interactive journey.
Use this chat feature to send him a little message of confidence and support.
Right.
So this became a big thing this holiday season.
I mean, it was a big thing, I would argue, long before this holiday season.
Yeah. So this holiday season, there was an estimated 3 billion packages in transit. That's a 30% jump from last year.
Yeah.
But an estimated 2.2 million packages were falling behind each day. And this became a real thing of like trying to figure out like how do I know whether or not this is going to get there in the time frame that I expected it to.
Yes, particularly clutch for all gifts for specific time-based holidays.
Yes. So this system, before it was available to the public, it was launched in the late 70s, which was kind of incredible. FedEx was the one that kind of started doing this. And initially it was just a way to improve efficiency. And then in 1979, they started offering it to customers. And you would call FedEx. It was a customer service line, and you would call and they would let you know kind of where it was.
Okay.
Which isn't that kind of charming?
Yeah. I guess I'm thinking about like what people were shipping in the 70s. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At that point, it's more peer-to-peer, I imagine. Like, hey, I just sent some gingerbread cookies to my grandson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, back then, it probably took, like, I just assume everything before the internet was just full-blown Oregon Trail, which I know it's not. I was alive before the internet for
Here's
a great...
Here's some hand-embroidered bell-bottom pants
right,
from your sister.
I will send them to you. They will be there in one calendar year.
In 1980, FedEx began buying up towers and created nationwide wireless data and communications
right. Yeah.
So that they could start tracking, you know, in a more effective way. In 1994, they launched FedEx.com, which was the first site to offer tracking information online.
I love learning about early internet. I feel like we've talked about it a couple times now in the last few episodes of just like, this was the first website that sold things on the website. And it's like, what? Yeah, duh.
Yeah, I mean, I have memories. Like, we're definitely the last generation to have memories of kind of what early internet was like.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, using early internet, but I don't really remember the option to buy things.
Yeah.
Like, it was mainly a place where you would enter questions, and get answers.
Yeah.
Ask Jeeves.
Or looking at like cool pictures of Final Fantasy characters was about all I knew how to use it for.
Or playing Bejeweled.
Even that was...
Oh, was that late 90s?
That was, yeah.
So the newest kind of innovation is the new Follow My Delivery feature. UPS rolled this out in 2016. Where you can track in real time. And so this is kind of a huge innovation that has been stolen by companies like Domino's with their pizza tracker.
Yeah.
Of this idea of like, yeah, I know it's supposed to get here today, but where is it in my city right now?
Right.
Like this idea that you can like be like, oh, okay, he's turning down my street. Okay, let me put my shoes on and I can like be standing there when he arrives with the package.
Right.
It's kind of incredible.
It is pretty wild. I think I like it better in the context of Domino's a little bit.
The personality of it that you know, like kind of the artisanship that's going
right.
into it. Yeah.
I'm a part of this.
Yeah.
By observing this, I am making it real. Mm-hmm. This is quantum pizza. Yes.
I have found this really useful. This is a time of great uncertainty, and there is a lot that you...
God, you sound like a press release for a fast food restaurant.
I know, and as a listener of Munch Squad, I appreciate that that my framing is pretty standard at this point.
Yeah.
But I will say that getting that kind of confirmation of like, you ordered this, it will be here in 4 days between 3 and 6 p.m. is so reassuring to me.
As a parent, there's a lot of shit that you, especially when we have a new baby, we can be as prepared as we want to be, but there's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Like, and it's reassuring to know that if we forget, like, oh, we need, like, a little tub that goes inside the bathtub to, like, do baths and stuff. We don't have one of those. We can get one, you know, from somewhere.
And know where it is. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that that is part of it. Also, like, as it continues to be kind of unsafe to be out in public, like, being able to know that you can get something you need and when you're going to get it is a very valuable thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just have a big appreciation for it. It's also just kind of like a little fun, a fun adventure to be like, oh, hey, well, how did it end up in Minnesota? I ordered it.
Shipping from logistics is
Oklahoma
is wild to me because it's like, here's this new MIDI keyboard you ordered. It's in Pasadena. And then 3 hours later, it's in Round Rock. And it's like, how the fuck did that? How the fuck did that happen?
Yeah.
Here's some submissions from our friends at home. Lucy says, I love to wonder at my honey bear, by which I mean the classic bear-shaped honey bottle. This little fellow is a sweet friend and provides the optimal delivery method for honey time. I agree. I haven't seen one better.
Yeah, I mean, you could put it in a regular bottle, but that's not
That's
fun.
Not fun.
No.
No. And also, honey always gets weird and gross and crystallized before you can really enjoy all of it.
That's
so you may
true.
As well have that happen inside of a cute little guy.
Yeah.
Morgan says, my wonderful thing is visiting the lamp section of a hardware store. It's so bright and warm and feels like a mini little lamp theme park. Love this one. That's good. Walking around Lowe's is such a soul-killing experience when you're like looking for one, you know, PVC pipe fitting and just cannot find it. But then you turn the corner and it's like, oh, 600 lamps. Although it does kind of suck when you're looking for one type of lamp. I remember shopping for ceiling fans and walking through that section being like, this is too much. This is overwhelming.
Well, and also like, I get the effectiveness of being able to see the fan in motion.
Yeah.
But then you're stumbling around, like looking at the ceiling. It hurts your neck.
Real life is happening down here. On the ground. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the great shows that they have on MaximumFun.org.
Yeah, I am excited to watch The Flophouse just did a live show where they watch Teen Wolf. I bought myself a ticket and I'm gonna watch that.
Treat yourself.
At my leisure.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many programs to enjoy. Go check out all this stuff at MaximumFun.org. We have other stuff at MacRoy.family, including merch and books and videos.
You want to talk about your little puzzles, Adventure Zone?
Puzzles for the kids.
A little Adventure Zone show coming
Yeah, out. We got a live Adventure Zone show coming.
Next week?
Jesus, God. Next week, we're doing Honey Heist, which is a bear-based heist game. And we are doing a... We don't know how it's going to pan out, but in a choose your own adventure version of it where we'll have live polls while we are playing. We're going to have Erica Ishii as a guest, which I'm very excited
it's
for.
It's going to be super fun. I think a lot of people get intimidated because they're like, oh, I haven't listened in a really long time.
Oh, Honey Heist, you don't need to know.
These are little bottle episodes.
Much. I do need to remember. I think, that's right. Okay, my character is a bear named the Thomas Crown Affair, named after the movie. Okay, yeah, I need to re-listen to the first Honey Heist. I think we actually have a video that summarizes the events of the first Honey Heist if you want to get in. But yeah, you can get tickets to that at MacRoy.family. I think it's next Friday, if that feels right to me. But it's the 19th, whatever day the 19th is.
I also want to give a shout out to those of you that are still on Facebook and looking for a wonderful podcast community. You can find our Facebook group. It's still listed under Rose Buddies Cast, but it is exclusively...
If you just search Wonderful Podcast, you'll probably get
exclusively
there.
Wonderful Podcast related, and there is a lot of great discussion that comes after these episodes. I imagine you will see a few television theme songs.
Oh, I bet.
In that group.
I bet. I think that's it. God, I wish we could go out with like, if we could go out with one of those, and I'll just sing it, I guess, one of those sitcom theme songs. What's the powerful one? What would you do?
I mean, are you going to sing the whole thing or?
I might just do a bar.
I mean, I always, at the end of Full House, I always like that, like little scat, that little scat part, you know, do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Bibbidi-bop-bada.
Maybe you just do that, and then that'll be how we go out.
Well, I just did. Am I done?
Well, do it hard. Do it good. I'll give you a second of silence. Give you a second of silence, and then you just do it fucking hard.
Bibbidi-bop-bada.
I love Frasier. Money won't pay. Working all day. Money won't pay. Working all day. Money won't pay.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.